Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who can still look intimidating in leg warmers, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome to Nightlight. It is time. It is time for us to come together and light the night. Ladies and gentlemen, great to have you with me on this Tuesday night. Got a great show for you guys tonight. Comedian and author and subject of the documentary I Am Comic, Rich Scheidner will join me at 7:35. Rich is an author of very prolific stand-up comic. He's had his own specials. He's been on The Tonight Show, Late Night with David Letterman, and I'll share this with him when he's on. When I started doing stand-up in the early 90s, he was the first comic I met that I had seen on TV regularly, and it was a thrill. So I'm very excited to have him on the show tonight to talk a little bit about his career and about comedy and some of the things he's working on. Just a tremendous comedian, one of the best. And in the second hour, rock star, Jeopardy rock star, Ben Chan comes in. He's going to be in studio and he's going to talk to us about his experience. We're going to put a little bow on Ben's Jeopardy experience. The whole country was behind him, but certainly here in Wisconsin, we were all in his corner. He had watch parties. He really let everybody kind of live vicariously through him and his experience on Jeopardy. I don't know how he kept a lid. Well, I guess it's money talks, but Ben was very good about not saying anything to anybody. I assume his wife knew what the situation was, but maybe not. We can ask Ben that tonight. He'll be along in studio, and I've got a little game for him. I'm going out on a limb here. I'm assuming Ben is a fan of the show The Office, which dropped yesterday. It's the anniversary, the 19-year anniversary this week of The Office hitting the airwaves. The American Office, I should say. The British Office was brilliant, too. The British Office was so good, I didn't even watch The American Office for a few years. And then once I started to, I was blown away. It's just one of my all-time favorite sitcoms. And I put Steve Carell probably over Ricky Gervais. I might get some pushback on that from comedy snobs, but Steve Carell's so brilliant. Anyway, I'm going to see if Ben can answer some Office questions, Jeopardy style. So we'll do that in the second hour. Conrad is ready, willing, and able to take text messages. Am I correct in saying that, Conrad?
You are correct.
Oh, fantastic. I like to be right.
I should have rang the bell, actually.
Yeah, get the bell ready. I'm going to have this bell ready, too. We're going to have to go stereo if Ben does well. I think he will. And he could just say, you know what? I don't want to do that. I'm done with Jeopardy. I can just ask. Then I'll say, okay, just answer the questions, not with a question. That's what we'll do. So that'll be fun to have him here. I read this article today. How much sleep do you get, Conrad?
It's different every night, I feel like.
Is it?
Because sometimes I'll just be tired and want to go to sleep, but there's some nights where I'm watching a movie and then I look at my watch and I'm like, oh, it's 3 a.m.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's nice. See, because you work on this show, and it's nice. I don't have to set an alarm. I usually get up. I kind of adjusted my hours when we started doing Nightlight, and now I get up between 9 and 10, typically. Mm-hmm. I go to bed between 1 and 2, but I'm kind of torn. I'm one of those people that likes the morning, but I also like the night. I love how quiet the night is. I love looking out the window when I'm watching TV, seeing snow or rain or just the trees blowing. But I love getting up in the morning, too, and seeing the sun come up. So I have a choice to make. I can either not sleep at all, or I can pick one or the other. So lately, I've been choosing night. And, you know, that's okay, too. The house is quiet. But I probably get between 6 and 7.5 hours of actual sleep.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I feel like I'm around there as well. If I'm staying up to 3, I'm still getting 7 hours. So I'll wake up a little later, but
see, that's my issue. I can't, I won't sleep past 10, even if I go to bed at 4. And when my hours were different before, when I was getting up early, when I started at Civic Media, I would go to bed. I couldn't sleep past six. So I'm a mess, but I have to get to bed by a certain hour if I, because I know I won't sleep past, nowadays it's 10 o'clock. So I got to get my butt to bed. Our question tonight, I'm going to put this out there early. Do you get enough sleep? How much sleep do you get a night? And how much do you wish you got? That's our question tonight. How much sleep do you get a night? And how much do you wish you got? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. And I thought of this because I saw this article on Yahoo Life, which is where I get all my news. They recommend at least 7 hours of sleep a night. And that's not just like going to bed at 10, getting up at 5. That's like in bed at 9, asleep by 10, and waking up at 5. I think a lot of people do that. They go to bed and it's like, well, I'm going to bed at 10, I'll get up at 6, but you don't really fall asleep until like 11, 11:30, so you're really only getting 6 hours. You know, you wake up because you hear something or you have to pee or whatever. So you don't really get uninterrupted sleep.
Yeah, I mean, since doing this show, I can't just go home and then go right into bed.
Oh, no, me either. No, you got to have some chill time.
Exactly.
Which is what I hope this show is for people who are listening. I hope they're chilling out to this.
Yeah.
But when I leave here, I need to go chill. And I have kind of a drive. That helps. But this is crazy. Gen Zers, they say, prefer to go to bed around 9 o'clock.
Hmm.
I mean, you're not even staying up for the news. I mean, nobody watches that news anymore anyway, but that's so early. That's pre-Law and Order. 2%. Oh. Go to bed before 8 p.m., 2% of Americans. About 4% go at around 8 o'clock. 9% of Americans go to bed around 9 p.m. 19% around 10 p.m. 20% around 11 p.m. and 25% after midnight. And that's why this article was written. They're saying the sleep you get after midnight is not as good a sleep that you get before midnight. Does that make sense?
I wonder why. Why does it matter just like an hour? Well, like from 11 to... or.
I think what they're saying is when you go to bed, when you're not overtired, okay, you get better sleep.
Hmm. See, I have a... if I'm not tired, I'm not going to fall asleep.
Right.
At that time. I can't just... I'm just going to stare... just
I know.
At my ceiling. Oh.
I think what they're saying is like, if you have to get up and it's a chore to get to bed, you're overtired. Like, you should go into bed, grab a book, your phone, whatever, and go when you're not that tired yet. Then you're relaxing.
Oh, okay.
You kind of ease into sleep, if that yeah. makes sense.
Yeah.
How much sleep do you get a night on average? A lot of 13% say less than 5 hours. 38% of people say 5 to 6 hours. That's what I was doing like all through my 30s. I was writing. I had a staff writing job. I was still working on writing movies and I would get freelance work. I just didn't. And I had two young kids. I had to work. I had to take the work. I was getting 5 to 6 hours of sleep. On the two movie sets I've been on, I probably slept 2 to 3 hours a night for like a month. And that was brutal.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. But your adrenaline yeah. keeps you going. It's like, And you know, the idea of making money, that's a motivator. That's yeah. like, get me some coffee. I can do this. But man, there's nothing like a good night of sleep. 38% say they get 7 to 8 hours. That's pretty good. That's where I want to be. So where are you guys at? Let us know. 855-752-4842. How much sleep do you get a night? How much do you wish you got? We'll just open that up. There you go. That's our question for tonight. There is an excellent contest. This is Civic Media's first contest that's happening here. I'm going to try to pull this up, Conrad. I don't know if you have it. I have it in your messages. I'm going to look for it. But this is Civic Media's first contest, and it's very easy. It just involves you downloading the app. So you listen every day between March 19th and the 29th. 29th is Friday. Listen every day until Friday. for a keyword at the top of the hour at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m. on any Civic Media station. And I recommend you have to download the app to play, and that's what makes it so easy. You hear the keyword within the hour after 7, 10, 1, and 3, within the hour, go to the app, enter the keyword, and you could be one of four daily winners, one each contest hour. Receive overnight, you get an overnight getaway to Chula Vista in the Wisconsin Dells, the Chula Vista Resort, beautiful resort. All entrants, daily winners included, even if you win the Chula Vista, are eligible for, this says two grand prizes. It's got to be a typo. It's got to be three grand prizes that include bicycles, a 3-in-1 blender, and an outdoor patio love seat. You could win one of those three grand prizes. And Chula Vista. You can go to Chula Vista for a night too, but you got to download the app. It's so easy though. Hear the keyword, enter it in the app, and you're all set. It's called Ride into Spring. It's Civic Media's first contest, and I think it's pretty cool. We are not eligible to win. Conrad and I have a tandem bike we tool around on in Green Bay with a sandwich board promoting Nightlight. But it's pretty cool. So there's also some good news today, too. Oh, I have to also promote. Okay. So here's another great way, folks. And here's another reason why I think you gotta get the app. Because you can text us. We're on statewide. You just click on any station and listen, and then there's a little text icon. You can text us throughout the show. Tell us what you're thinking. Tell us what you think about what we're talking about. Talk to the guests, whatever you need to do. And you can always check out the Civic Media News podcast, too. It's at the top of every station. It's about 8 or 10 minutes long. You get all your news, sports. I do an entertainment beat there. You get weather. It's great. Check that out, too. I think we'll keep our good news for Civic Media, and we'll do that in the second hour. Because there's a lot of people up for awards, which is pretty cool. So tell us what your sleep habits are. We need to know. We need inspiration so we can sleep better. We'll read those texts when we come back. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about our first guest. And we're going to hear some of his stand-up. That's coming up next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. My mama told me, she said, son, please beware. There's this thing called love, and it's a everywhere, as she told me, it can break your heart out and put you in misery. Since I met this little woman, I feel it's happened to me, and I'm telling you, it's too late to turn back now. I believe I'm falling in. Back. Great to have you with me on this Tuesday night here in the state of Wisconsin. For Nightlight, we are broadcasting live statewide from our beautiful studios in downtown Green Bay at WGBW. Our first text of the night from the 608, Aunt Carla says, as a flight attendant, our question, by the way, is how much sleep do you get a night? How much do you wish you got? Aunt Carla says, as a flight attendant, it can be crazy hours depending if your trip is an a.m. or p.m. trip. But if I had a choice, 8:30 p.m. and up at 4:30 a.m., love early mornings, rarely that happens. So Carla is not a flight attendant anymore, Conrad?
No, she still is.
Oh, she is?
Yes.
She just sets her own hours, or?
I'm not totally sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. But, I misunderstood. Yeah. It sounds like she's still at the mercy of the airlines, and they set her airline, or they set her.
Yeah.
Hours. Okay. I'm with you, Aunt Carla. I like the mornings too. Something about the quiet. And I remember there was a phase when my kids were young, I would get up like at 4 or sometimes even 3:30, and I would have like 3 hours before they get up, and I could work and I could write. And the house was quiet, get some coffee going. It was great. But I had to be in bed by like 8:30 or 9. That was tough. So that's kind of cool. Do you get a discount, Conrad, because your aunt is a flight attendant?
I'm sure if I asked, she probably could.
You think so?
Maybe.
Would that make things awkward?
Maybe. No, it wouldn't make things awkward. No, but. Okay.
So did you watch The Bachelor, Conrad?
I've never seen that show.
I just don't. This is an actual headline in the New York Post. New York Post and other tabloids calling the finale absolutely jaw-dropping. It ends the same every year. That's the routine. The guy hands her a rose, asks her to marry him. She says yes, and they move on. Good night.
That's jaw-dropping news right there?
Apparently.
Jaw-dropping. It ends the same way as last season.
Do you believe we've done this 28 years in a row? That's what's jaw-dropping about it. And then this cracks me up. Talk about a slow entertainment news day. The new James Bond. Well, he's not the new James Bond yet. He might be. His name is Aaron Taylor Johnson. He's going to replace Daniel Craig, supposedly. And the New York Post also said the former 84-year-old Bond portrayer, George Lazenby, says he supports Aaron Taylor Johnson on one condition, and that is that Johnson do the character justice. Now, I get it. They need things to write about. But this guy was Bond in one film. How did he? That's not even doing the character justice.
I had to research real quick just to see who that was.
Yeah.
And now I realize who it was. And he's in the movie Kick, you know.
Really?
The superhero movie. That's like they're fake superheroes, but then they get into real stuff.
Oh, really?
It's a really funny movie.
Huh.
But I had no idea it was him because he's the main character of that movie.
He might be the only one-termer when it comes to James Bond. And this was in The Guardian. George Lazenby backs Aaron Taylor Johnson for Bond. Like, did they need his endorsement? He played Bond in 69. You know, he was the youngest actor to play Bond. That's kind of cool. But it's just weird the way they sell headline. And I guess it's clickbait. You know, they want you to click. Oh, this guy supports him? Like, what the heck? I don't get it. Coming up at 7:35, folks, Rich Scheidner will be here, the very funny comedian. He has been a stand-up comic, as I mentioned earlier at the top of the show. I watched Rich on TV several times. He was the first comic I met in person that I had seen on TV. So I'm really excited to have him here. He does a lot of great relationship-type humor. He's written for a lot of the big comedians like Leno and Seinfeld and all those guys. He's been in movies, TV, had his own specials, and just a good dude, too. Let's play a little. This is a little bit. And this is the first stand-up special he did that I saw him on, and I was thrilled when it came up when I Googled him the other day when I knew he was going to be on the show. So this is the first special I saw him on. Go ahead, Conrad.
As I moved into my house, a friend of mine comes over. She goes, "This is nice, Rich. How are you going to decorate it?" Decorate it? I'm a guy. Put the couch there, put the TV in front of it, I'm finished. If I get real fancy, put the toilet paper in that little roller thing, you know? Because you women just know we guys don't really clean up if you're not around. How about the first time she had to use your bathroom, guys? She usually starts with a question. Do you have a bathroom I can use? No, there's a gas station down the street. You check out most women's bathrooms, these are operating room clean. They got cotton balls and gauze pads and more than one towel hanging up. I got one towel, and that one stiffens I buy another.
That is how I went through college. I honestly, if the towel, because sometimes the towel will get stiff before it starts to smell. And that was always my thing. Like, if it's just stiff, I could still use it because the water I'm drying off my body will loosen the towel up. As long as it doesn't smell. That joke always resonated with me. I thought it was funny. Got another text here from Steve from the 920. Conrad's dad checking in. My recent sleep habit is closing out the day and listening to the Pete Schwabe show. Oh, thank you, Steve. Then watching half of a Dexter episode, currently on season 5, episode 10, and then falling asleep around 10:30-ish and getting up between 5:30 and 6 a.m. with the help of our 19-year-old cat, Raskus?
Yeah, that's correct.
That's kind of a cool name. Where did they get that name?
My brother was big into Legos when he was young, and that was one of the Lego nights.
Oh,
so
cool.
My brother.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that your brother named the cat?
Yep.
That's awesome. So Steve says he gets around 7 hours total. Steve, I am thrilled, first of all, that you listen. Second of all, I would do Dexter, then Nightlight. Because, like, hopefully you get a couple laughs or you get to participate in the show, and then you go watch a show about a serial killer. It seems like it would give you bad dreams. Those are great hours, actually. I love that. 10:30 to 5:30 or 6. I could live with that. And then here's Jim, the 920. Jim from Appleton says, a lot of Bond people are reluctant to count it, but Peter Sellers was James Bond in Casino Royale. All right. I got to Google this. Peter Sellers, first of all, is one of the greatest actors who ever lived. Casino Royale, wasn't that a... 1967. So did they remake that with Daniel Craig?
I think that I didn't know that either, but
wow,
it looks
you,
like
Jim.
They did, yeah.
Yeah. This is great. This is all coming back to me now. Okay. But an endorsement from Peter Sellers would have been cooler. Cuz many people consider him the greatest actor. That's how versatile he was. I usually don't say versatile. I usually say versatile. However that came out, I'm not sure. But you get the picture. That's kind of cool. So keep those texts coming, folks. I love this. And it's motivating me to try to get more sleep. That's our question tonight. How much sleep do you get a night? And how much do you want to get? A Yahoo article sparked the whole conversation. We're reading your texts online. And when we come back, comedian and author Rich Scheidner. Coming up a little later in the show, Jeopardy champ Ben Chan will be here. This is Pete Schwabe. You got Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Did you miss what's hot from Wisconsin to Hollywood? Listen to Nightlight with Pete Schwabe podcast on civicmedia.us. You can always listen through Spotify, Apple Podcast, or the Civic Media app. Take Nightlight with Pete Schwabe anywhere you go. Once again, here is your host, Pete Schwabe.
Welcome back. So, I was getting worried about Conrad's mom, but she finally texted. And Paula from the 920 says it takes at least a half hour to fall asleep. Sometimes longer. I wish I could just fall immediately. I probably get 7 hours. 7 hours, that's all you need. That's what they say, Paula. So I think you're doing okay. Maybe Steve wakes you up every night because he has dreams about watching Dexter and falling asleep and dreaming about serial killers. You'd probably sleep better. You know, and I know a lot of couples, as they get older, they don't want to sleep in the same bed. They have separate rooms because one snores, the other one moves around, talks in their sleep, whatever it is. You know, there's nothing wrong with that either. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour at 8:35, Ben Chan will be here, Jeopardy rock star. He's going to stop by and put a bow on his time on Jeopardy. He thrilled our entire community. And the entire country. Ben was so much fun to watch, and he's an even better guy, and he will be here shortly. Tomorrow night on the program, Todd Townsend, the former running mate of Dwayne Wade at Marquette under Tom Crean several years ago. He was on the Final Four team. Todd will be here. He's also my cousin. He will be here tomorrow night on Nightlight talking about Marquette's run in the NCAA tournament. Right now, I am very excited to welcome my next guest. He is an esteemed stand-up comedian, best-selling author, the subject of documentaries. He's had his own specials when it comes to stand-up. He's been on all the late-night shows. The very funny Rich Scheidner. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. Where are you joining us from, Rich? Yeah.
There he is.
There you go. You got the earpieces in now. All right. Where are you joining us from, Rich?
Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh man, that place is booming, isn't it?
It is. It really is. We moved here right before the pandemic hit. We hit February 2019, and the place has just gone crazy.
Nice timing. Do you miss LA?
Yeah. Miss certain friends in LA, but that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Same.
That's it. You know, I mean, there's so much that's easy to miss. You know,
for
we
sure.
We got here the first day. We had to go to the bank, you know. So it's like, oh, we got to go to the bank. It's like just drove across country, got to the house, got to go bank. 9 in the morning, had an appointment. I said, we better leave at 6. We're going to get there by 9. We drove down off this mountain. We were at the bank in 10 minutes.
Oh, man, that's great. Yeah, yeah. I know so many people who've moved there and just love it. Rich, I'm so thrilled to have you on the show. And I just realized the other day. Yeah, thank you. I just said this when I was opening the show. You're the first comic that I actually met in person who I had seen on TV quite a bit. When I started doing stand-up in the early 90s, my friend Ty Phipps, who was a fellow open micer at the time, and I, mostly Ty, grilled you with questions one night at the Funny Firm in Chicago, and you answered every single question. It was just great. That was a phenomenal first impression you made on me, and I was like, oh, he's a great dude, so... This is fun.
Well, you know, we love to talk stand-up comedy, and so many people ahead of me, it helped me out, like Shandling or, excuse me, or Franklin Jai, you know, people that I did the same thing to, you know, I asked as many questions as I could, because you wanted anything to help you, anything, because you come into this thing so blind, you just go,
yeah.
Well, I'm funny to my friends, and then all of a sudden you're going like, funny in front of strangers, man, when those eyes hit you. When there's eyes of expectation, like we came here to laugh, you're going to do it. You're going to make us laugh. You go, oh, I need some help up here. What do you got? Any shortcuts? Should I move my right leg this way when I tell the punchline? Would that help?
And Franklin Ajay, one of his jokes I remember, like I was probably at a sleepover at a friend of mine's house. We were watching late night TV and he did this great joke where he said, why do white guys box? And then he started doing this thing where he was chucking and jiving, and he goes, "Man, I gotta get out of these suburbs." It was such a great.
He was so brilliant in so many ways, man.
Yeah,
he I was mean, the great. One that I always liked in that way. He goes, and this is before Tiger Woods. He goes, "If you put black people into the golf game, it'll speed up the TV shows. It'll speed up the game."
I always used to do a joke. It's so funny about Tiger Woods, where I grew up in Chicago. You know, people, I don't want to say, they were just a little bit behind in the neighborhood. You know, it was a working class neighborhood. And one of the guys said, and this is a quote. He said, yeah, it could be tough for a young black kid like that joining the tour. A lot of culture, a lot of cultural differences. My cultural differences. What do you think? He's like a street golfer carrying his clubs around the projects looking for pickup games or... Ridiculous. So
not a cultural differences.
Cultural differences. hey Rich, tell us how you got your when did you start and tell us when you decided I can do this and where did you start?
I started in Washington, D.C. I was going to law school.
Wow.
It wasn't a great one. It was the International School of Law and Screen Door Repair. It wasn't actually accredited at the time. No, it became George Mason University before. I didn't even know I had enough. It was a long story, but I actually ended up with a degree, believe it or not, because I thought I left early to go to New York. But I started in D.C. There was nobody I knew doing it. I thought I was funny. A friend of mine in law school thought I was funny. He took me down to a coffee house, like talent night sort of thing, and on a Saturday night, and I did 5 minutes. You know, I got like one reaction. I got like one guy at one point, like that, you know what I mean? Like, and you knew, you knew instinctively that was the deal because you had to make that transition from being funny around your friends in a moment to being funny on demand in front of strangers. And I knew that one reaction was enough for me. Like that guy didn't know me before I walked on stage and I made him laugh.
That's so great. And
I kept coming back. And then when Garvin's was the first paying club on the East Coast back in 1979, January, in D.C.
Yeah.
And I became a house MC, so to speak. And,
nice.
And I started working with these guys from New York and some from L.A. And I thought, I can hang with these guys. And they were telling me the same thing. You can hang with us. And I was working, opening act for a lot of bands. I got hooked up in Cellar Door Productions down there. And every size place venue they had, Cellar Door, the Buy Bayou, the big places open up, you know, Meriwether Post Pavilion, 13,000 people for Chicago. So I just became like their opening, because it's cheap, you know. I was use the bass player's mic. That's what they always say. They go, don't touch the lead singer's mic, the bass player's mic, you know. Just go out there, you know, because there was no equipment change. So I, that's where I got most of my, was opening up for bands. But anyway, so I just thought, with, I started in 77, and by early spring 79, I moved to New York.
My guest is Rich Scheidner. He is a comedian and author, very funny comedian. You, okay, so that's really interesting, because a lot of guys end up in LA because of the people they work with, right? I know when you sort of get their approval, it's like, okay, maybe I can do this. And you move out there and it's like, all right, where do I even start? You went out there at a really cool time. Just, I love your Facebook posts. I love when you write about comedians and comedy and starting out. It's just like this great timeline you have. What was LA like in the 70s or early 80s when you got out there, stand-up wise?
Yeah, I got out there in 82. My first wife and I, Carol Leifer, we moved out there because she got a TV pilot. And that was always, back then in New York City, LA was the graduate school. You had to graduate from New York. There was nothing happening in New York City. Letterman wasn't on, I think, until like later, 82. Anyway, she got a pilot and we moved to LA. And LA was it was two places. It was the Comedy Store and the Improv. That was it. I mean, the Laugh Factory wasn't started yet. And all these little other places, there were always other places, you know. You go to some place where you're performing in front of a dartboard, you know. I hope they got all the darts before we started this show. There's always those places, right?
Right.
In New York or LA. But you know, LA was it, you know, so I'd gone out there to do Evening at the Improv in October 81, Carol and I and some other people went out there. And so we moved back then, like when we moved out there in January 82. So we were improv acts, so to speak. And then Sam Kennison said, you got to come over to the store and hang out here. And we met somehow, started, you know, like you do, just start hanging out. And so then I went over and Mitzi passed me. So I was doing both rooms for a while. You just had to keep it on the down low, you know, you just kind of ran back and forth. Because there was still a lot of bitterness between these acts. I remember I was going in the back door of the Comedy Store one time, and there were like three or four comics standing there. And I was in a hurry, you know, because you're tight, you're trying to make the spot. And I'm in there, and they blocked me. They just moved in front of them to block me from coming into the Comedy Store. And one of them, I swear, because I was young and angry. And he goes, you're an improv act. I said, you better get out of my way or you're going to be on your ass act. How about that? Right? And the guy, too, and Sam Kennison started laughing. He says, you guys better move. And
he's like, that's funny.
And they did. And I just went in. But there was still bitterness between the two clubs. You know?
That's hilarious. Mitzi Shore is actually from, we're broadcasting from Green Bay, Wisconsin right now, Rich. I live
about
an hour north. Mitzi Shore is from that town. It's crazy.
And yeah, that's where she met Sammy. She met Sammy in Dort out there, some Wisconsin Dort.
I think at UW Madison they met, but yeah, she spent her early years in Marinette, which I still can't believe. Yeah. But, that didn't get me anywhere with her when I auditioned for her, unfortunately, but,
I know where you met Sammy. That won't work too well. Right. You mean that son of a, that guy I divorced.
Okay. Last time I played that card.
It was a nice romantic moment at the time, wasn't it?
Man? Yeah. Must have started out. Okay. So you're like the perfect guy. You're like the perfect guy, Rich, to write the history of stand-up comedy. Because the way you, like I said, I love your posts. Tell us a little bit about that. Where can people see that? And what was that like, making that?
Yeah, I'm doing it around. We're trying to get it. It's together. It could be easily three-part documentary, easily. And I started doing it. I started getting interested. You know, you don't get interested. I didn't get interested in the history of stand-up until I became history. You know, when you get older, you start, hey, what happened there? What was I doing? But no, seriously, I mean, I got into it when I was younger because I felt stupid. I didn't know much about the history of the business I was in. And you start picking up little things here and there. I mean, before, you know, I'm talking about before Lenny Bruce, because everybody's kind of aware of my generation. We're always aware of Lenny Bruce and all that. And I started looking at it, and there were a couple of books out there. There was Phil Berger's book, which was, you know, tremendous. There were just a lot of, I got so many behind me here I'm looking at right now, but there were just books. I started reading it and picked it up, and I became friends with Phyllis Diller. And one time we were talking, and we both thought that Mark Twain was the first stand-up, because I'd read Twain's autobiography, and I thought all those lectures he did back in the late part of the 19th century was essentially stand-up comedy. And then I started reading more Twain, and I read this essay talking about the funniest man he ever saw. And it was this guy named Artemus Ward, who was, by every definition, the first stand-up comic. And he started doing it during the Civil War. So then I started looking at it, what it meant and what stand-up meant and why, how it changed and what changed it, what it said about America. And you start looking at these game changers and people who changed the thing. Like the biggest, without a doubt, I mean, just off the top, you know, the biggest innovation ever in stand-up comedy was the microphone.
Yeah,
I mean, before 1922, around 1922, they were all shouting their lines. That's why the comics were like, they come out dancing, doing funny dancing and silly, singing silly songs. They were yelling and just screaming. And they had to be fast because he couldn't give any air for a heckler to come in. You know, if the heckler was loud as you, if the heckler was as funny as you, you might lose it. You only had like 6 minutes in vaudeville, unless you're a headliner, then you had like 17. But I'm just saying, there was then the microphone. That's the only tool the comic ever needed. That's the only really that's the greatest game changer ever. That's when you'd have to say that's the start of modern stand up.
Even Artemus and probably had to convince the guy to let him headline.
No, it's
hey Rich, hold that thought for one second. Okay. Yeah. All right. This is Pete Schwab at Nightlight. We'll be back right away. Coming up next, more Rich Scheidner.
Brother's got a night to keep, he can't hang around. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our house, it has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed.
Welcome back. I am talking to the very funny, very prolific Rich Scheidner. He is a very funny stand-up comedian, author, filmmaker. He's pretty much done it all. Rich, I got to ask you about something. One of the last times I saw you in person was at Richard Jenny's memorial at the Laugh Factory. I mean, for me, I kind of segued into writing probably earlier than I wanted to, but being around all those stand-ups was so incredible. Like all these guys I'd looked up to, and you described Jenny, who I became pretty good friends with. You just had this great way of talking about him. And you said when he was done with a premise, the only thing that was left was bone. Like it was so eloquently so said. Yeah. Can you explain that like about Rich Jenny a little?
Yeah. Well, you know, Jenny was such a great writer, a great performer too. But I remember one time when clock radios came out with the snooze button, right? So I think I'm clever. I come up with like 3-4 jokes I add on the snooze button and the clock radio. And I work with Jenny one night, you know, to do my 3-4 jokes. Then Jenny comes on and he does like 20 jokes on the snooze button and the clock radio. He ate that thing up, man, ate it up. So at the end of the night, I said, hey, you want my 3 jokes? You can have my 3 jokes to add to your pile. Just take them. Most comics, they get a fresh bit. Somebody discovers a fresh vein of comedy, right?
Yeah.
Whatever it is, the new technology, the iPhone comes out. Whatever. Most comics take a little bite. They're like, you know, lions, predators. You know, we grab and take a big hunk of meat and run on for the next thing. But Jenny, man, when Jenny finished with a premise, there was nothing left but bones.
That was great.
And I remember Chris Albrecht came over to me. He goes, that was the line, right? And I was so proud of the line. And the next day in the LA Times, when they reviewed, they actually did a thing about the memorial for him. They credited my line to Tim Allen. So I go, there's another lesson in showbiz. You know, the reporter goes, somebody said that line is a great line. I'll just give it to Tim Allen. Everybody knows who he is. He doesn't have to explain who I was. You know?
Oh, so my gosh.
It's a showbiz. It's a funny showbiz lesson, right? But Rich was, I mean, he was so, you know, this is what happens with stand-ups. I mean, I'm not going to psychoanalyze it that way, but
right.
I hung out with him a few times. His mind was so active all the time. If you were like, you know, they say like if a rat doesn't chew a certain amount, its teeth will actually grow up into its head and kill it, right? That has to constantly chew because the teeth are so fast growing. And to me, that's like a comic with its brain. We're so working on things that if we ever don't keep that going on, working on premises, bits, jokes, writing stories, novels, whatever, our minds will eat it up. Our minds will turn inward. We will eat our own brain up. Wow. We will turn on ourselves, that mind, that magic magnifying mind that we have. Because that's what we do, right? We sit around. I remember, you know, I mean, you've been in relationships. There were relationships like where you know, you're quiet and the other person expects you to be talking all the time, like you're on stage and entertaining all. And you go, they go, what are you thinking? I go, I'm thinking about rental cars. If I can find a new way angle into the joke on rental cars, I'm trying to find a new, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
What do you think I'm thinking? Right. What do you think of this, what I do? You know, I mean, I sit around, I look like I'm not doing anything, but I'm writing in my head, you know, working, you know, that's, and it takes a while for some people never get used to it. They just go, you're too quiet at home. You sit down in your office, you're not doing anything. I may look like I'm not doing anything, but when I write something down, it's worth it for me. You know,
the wheels are turning. Yeah.
A lot of ruminating before something comes out of the chute.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah. So you did it. You wrote a book, Rich, called Kicking Through Ashes, My Life as a Stand-Up Comic in the 1980s comedy boom.
Yeah.
How long did that, first of all, where can people find that? And tell us a little bit about that experience.
Amazon.
Okay. Rich Scheidner.
Yeah. Amazon. Okay. Yeah. Well, I was one of those people who turned on me. I'll be honest with you, you know, 11 years ago, I went into, you know, I battled depression and anxiety my whole life. I went into a suicidal depression, ended up in UCLA psych unit for 13 days.
Wow.
And I came out and I met this guy, and he really was like Vic Anderson, Vic Anderson, if you look him up in the annals of sports in Wisconsin, he was an all-state football and basketball player back in the 60s.
Really?
Anyway, he's a guy that helped me tremendously spiritually. But anyway, one of the things he said, well, he didn't even know what I did. He said, what did you used to do? I said, well, I used to do stand-up comedy. Why don't you do it anymore? I said, well, nobody's paying me more. Did you get paid when you first started doing it? I said, no. He said, then start doing it again for free.
Wow.
So I started doing it again for free. Same thing about, what else did you do? I said, well, I used to write for TV, but nobody's paying me for it. Then just put stuff on Facebook. People seem to like when people put stories on Facebook. And that's how I started doing it. And then people were like, I started writing stories about stand-up, my experience in stand-up, and that's how the book came out. People would say to me, oh man, you're just giving your stories away on Facebook. Nobody will buy a book. I said, I got like 50, 60 people. How many people will follow me? If I'm going to depend upon that for my book profit, I'm in trouble right from the beginning. You know? So it's like, they're encouraging me and they're helping me. And people would come and say, and come in on, you know, there were more than 50 or 60, but you know what I mean? They were like,
yeah.
They would say, I was there that night, and they would help me with a detail I didn't have, or they'd go, I remember that. I was, you know, and so it was a lot of that. It was a lot of help that people gave me when I was putting these stories down.
Well, I think too, when people started reading them, and I know when I started reading them, like my first thought was, this guy should write a book. Like, you had so many great stories and you had more comments than I had friends. So I'm like, you're being modest, but people love reading those. So there's a quote about the project on your website that says, a funny joke pleases while exposing hidden truths. That was so great. And to me, that was the essence of stand-up comedy in a way. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, the best jokes always. There was a guy named Gershon Legman, right, who chronicled jokes, especially dirty jokes. He was very famous in the 40s and 50s in the circles. He influenced Lenny Bruce, the Beat Poets, a lot of people. And he wrote about like what the truths are behind jokes, right? Like, in terms of back then, most of the sexual jokes were written by guys, so they always seem to slam women, right, in some way. Like, the woman's cheating on the guy. You know all the great cheating jokes from the 50s when guys lived under the double standard, right? That they can go out and cheat and do what they want, but that's okay because they're guys.
They're
but
guys.
The woman has to be the Virgin Mary at home, right? So the guys, but what those jokes were saying, like he was saying, was, but there's always a hidden truth. There's always a bit of neurosis exposed and anxiety exposed by the joke teller. You can tell who somebody is by the kind of jokes they like to tell. And those jokes exposed men's fear that women were at home cheating on them like they were cheating on the women.
Hey, Rich, can you hang for just a couple more minutes?
Yeah, sure.
We got to do a quick thing. We'll be right back with more of Rich Sheidner. This is really fun. I want to pick up right where we left off. This is Pete Schwabe and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.